Osho, The Hidden Harmony, Talks on Heraclitus, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 10.
Bhagwan, Heraclitus said, it would not be better if things happened to men just as they wish. Unless you expect the unexpected, you will never find truth, for it is hard to discover and hard to attain. Nature loves to hide. The Lord, whose oracle is at Delphi, neither speaks nor conceals, but gives signs.
Existence has no language, and if you depend on language, there can be no communication with existence. Existence is a mystery. You cannot interpret it. If you interpret, you miss. Existence can be lived, but not thought about. It is more like poetry, less like philosophy. It is a sign. It is a door. It shows, but it says nothing. That's why through mind there is no approach to existence. If you think about it, you can go on thinking and thinking about and about, but you will never reach it, because precisely it is thinking that is a barrier. Look, see, feel, touch, you will be nearer, but don't think. The moment thinking enters, you are thrown off the track. Then you live in a private world. Thinking is a private world. It belongs to you. Then you are enclosed, encapsulated, prisoned within yourself. Non-thinking, you are no more. You are no more enclosed. Non-thinking, you open. You become porous. Existence flows in you, and you flow into existence. But the tendency of the mind is to interpret. Before you see something, you have already interpreted it. You hear me. Even before I have said anything, you are already thinking about it. That's how listening becomes impossible. You will have to learn to listen. Listening means you are open, vulnerable, receptive, but you are not in any way thinking. Thinking is a positive action. Listening is passivity. You become like a valley and receive. You become like a womb and you receive. If you can listen, then nature speaks. But it is not a language. The nature doesn't use words. Then what nature uses? Says Heraclitus, it uses signs. A flower is there. What is the sign in it? It is not saying anything. But can you say it is not saying really? It is saying much. But it is not using any words. A wordless message. To hear the wordless, you will have to become wordless. Because only the same can hear the same. Only the same can relate to the same. Sitting by a flower, don't be a man, be a flower. Sitting by the tree, don't be a man, be a tree. Taking bath in a river, don't be a man, be a river. And then millions of signs are given to you. And it is not a communication, it is a communion. Then the nature speaks. It speaks in thousands of tongues, but not in language. It speaks through millions of directions, but you cannot consult a dictionary for it, and you cannot ask a philosopher what it means. The moment you start thinking what it means, you are already on the path going astray. Somebody asked Picasso, a very learned man, a critic. He looked at Picasso's paintings. He had come to visit him. And then he said, they look beautiful, but what do they mean? For example, this painting, just the painting they were standing before, what does it mean? Picasso shrugged his shoulders and said, look outside the window, what this tree means and what that bird who is singing and what is the meaning of sun rising. And if this whole exists without meaning anything, why can't my painting exist without any meaning? Why you ask what it means? You want to interpret it. You want to give it a linguistic pattern. You want to communicate, not commune. No, it doesn't mean anything. It is there in its total glory. It has a meaning, but it doesn't mean anything. The meaning is existential. Look, watch, feel, move into it, allow it to move into you, but don't ask questions. If you ask questions, enter a university. You cannot enter the universe. If you want to enter the universe, don't ask. There is nobody to reply you. You will have a total different quality of being. Only then you will be in contact with it. It is reported of a Zen master, a very rare phenomenon, unbelievable, because the mind boggles down. He had painted in the king's palace, and the king was asking again and again, is it complete? And he will say, wait a little more, wait a little more, and years pass. And the king said, it is taking too much of time, and you don't allow me even to enter the room, because he will lock the room and then paint. and I am getting old, and I am getting more and more excited to what you are doing inside the room. Is not yet the painting ready? The master said, painting is ready, but I am watching for you. You are not ready. The painting is ready since long. But that is not the point. Unless you are ready, to whom I will show it? Existence is there, always waiting, ready. At every moment, at every turn of the road, just by the corner, it is always and always waiting. It is infinite patience waiting, but you are not ready. Then it is said that the king became ready, and the painter said, okay, the time has come. They entered the room. Nobody else was allowed in the room. The painting was really wonderful. It was difficult to say that it is a painting. It looked almost real. The painter has done a painting of hills, valleys, and they looked almost three-dimensional, as if they existed. And by the hills there was a small path going somewhere inside. Now comes the most difficult part of this story. The king asked where this road leads. The painter said, I have not myself travelled yet on this road, but you wait, I will go and see. And he entered the path and disappeared beyond the hills and never came back. This is what a mystery means. It says many things without saying anything. If you move into nature to find where it leads, don't stand outside it and ask, because then nothing can be done. You have to move into it. If you move, you will never come back, because the very movement into existence, and you are losing your ego, you are disappearing. You will reach to the goal, but you will never come to relate the story about it. The painter never came back. Nobody comes back. Nobody can come back. Because the more you become existential, the more you are lost. Existence opens millions of doors for you. But you stand outside, and you would like to know something about it from the outside. There is no outside in nature. I would like to repeat these words. There is no outside to nature. Everything is inside. Because how anything can exist outside nature? The whole is the inner. And the mind is trying the impossible. It is trying to stand outside, to watch, to see what it means. No, you have to participate. You have to move into it and become one. And disperse like a cloud. Whereabouts unknown. Now listen to these words of Heraclitus. It would not be better if things happen to man just as they wish. Why? Why it would not be better? Because whatsoever you wish will be wrong. Because you are wrong. How can you wish, desire something right? to desire something right, you have to be right in the first place. Out of ignorance, whatsoever is desired will lead you to deeper and deeper hell. Because the desire is part of you. It comes out of you. How can anything else can come? All that will come will be you. That's why your desires create problems more and more. The more you desire, the more problems you create. The more you achieve your desires, the more you are in a difficulty. But there is no going back. You have to go on and on and on. Hence the insistence of all the knowers that the first point to meet the existence is to become desireless. Nothing is wrong in desiring. Desiring in itself is beautiful if a Buddha desires. But you desiring, how can you desire something which will lead you towards bliss? No, because desire comes out of you, it is part of you. It is a continuity. And if you are wrong, the desire is going to be wrong. It will repeat you again and again. In different situations, of course, in different worlds, on different planets, in different lives, but your desire will repeat you. Your desire cannot transform you. That's why I say to people that if you want to take sannyas, if you want to take a jump into the unknown, don't think about it. Leave it to me. Why the emphasis to leave it to me? Just so that you don't desire it. Let it be something which has not come from you. Because whatsoever comes out of you will be you, modified, colored in different ways, but it will be you. If you are a businessman and desire moksha, it will be a business. It cannot be otherwise. You will be looking for profit. In the other world, of course. But out of your mind, whatsoever comes will be out of your past. And a break is needed. A complete rift is needed. A rift which is unbridgeable. That is the meaning to go to a master and surrender. What you surrender? You surrender your desiring. What else you can surrender? Nothing else you have got. You say, no, I will not desire. No, you say something and I will do. You are allowing something else to enter in your past. If you say, yes, I am convinced, I am ready to take sannyas, the sannyas will be futile. Out of your conviction, if a sannyas happens, it is meaningless. But this is the trouble. You would like to be convinced first. You would like to argue about it first. Your mind would like to settle for it. People come to me and they say, unless the desire comes to us, how can we take the jump? But precisely this is the problem. You have been desiring out of you continuously for many lives. It leads nowhere. It cannot. Can you see the point? You are wrong. You desire. The desire goes wrong. You are wrong. You believe. The belief goes wrong. You have heard about King Midas, whatsoever he touches becomes gold. Whatsoever you touch, even if it is gold, it is immediately to turn into dust. The question is not of a right desire or a wrong desire. The question is of a right being or a wrong being. The question is not of a right act or wrong act. There are no right acts and no wrong acts. There are no right desires or wrong desires. There is only a desiring being. If it is ignorant, whatsoever comes out of it is going to be wrong. And if the desiring being is not ignorant, it would not be better if things happen to man just as they wish. Stop wishing. You have been living in hells because you have been wishing. Stop desiring. Stop desiring and the doors are open. Take her out. Desiring is bringing your mind into existence. Try to understand the nature of desire. Desiring means projecting your past into the future. And the future is unknown. And whatsoever you ask will be from the past. all desiring will repeat the past again and again. How can you desire the unknown, that which is in the future? How can you desire it? You don't know. The future is the unknown. Past is the known. If you desire, it will be from the past. Mulla Nasruddin was on his dying bed. Somebody asked him that if you were born again, would you like to make any change, or you would like to live the same life again? Mulla brooded long. Then he opened his eyes. He said, "One thing. I always wanted to part my hairs in the middle. And that will be the only change. I have been parting my hairs on the right, and I always wanted to part them in the middle. Otherwise, everything will be repeated as it is." It looks stupid, but it is how it is. If you think, if the next chance is given to you, what you will do? All the changes that you will like to make will not be more than Mulla is asking. There will be just parting the hair in the middle. You would like to have another woman, but what difference does it make? You would like another profession, what difference does it make? It will not be more than parting the hairs in the middle. You cannot ask from the past, and the future is unknown. Because you go on asking from the past, you move in a vicious circle. That circle is the world, the samsara. The coming and going, being born again and being dying again. Again and again you do the same. Not a single basic change it cannot be. Because whatsoever you will think out of the known. The known is your past. Then what to do? Don't desire. Let the future come without you desiring it. The future will come. It need not be desired. It is already coming. You need not force your projections on it. You be passive, don't be active about it. Let it come. You don't ask anything about it. That's what is the meaning of desirelessness. It is not moving from the world, renouncing the world and going to the Himalayas. All those things are immature. Living, renouncing means not desiring and waiting without any desire. Just waiting whatsoever happens. We will be a witness to it. If you can wait without desiring, everything will happen to you. And then it happens from the totality, from the whole, from God itself. If you ask, desire, it will happen, but it will happen out of you. And then you move within yourself, never allowing the existence to happen to you, enclosed. It would not be better if things happen to man just as they wish. Says Heraclitus, it is good that things doesn't happen as you wish them. That is the only possibility of your awakening. That's why he says it is good. Because if every desire is fulfilled, you will be completely in a coma. Because there will be no disturbance. You wanted riches and riches are there. and you wanted beautiful women, and beautiful women are there, and you wanted a success, and the success is there, and you wanted a ladder to reach to heaven, and the ladder is there, you will be in a coma. You will be in a dream. If everything is fulfilled, you will never try to seek the truth. There will be no gap for you, because only misery, dukkha, unhappiness, the hell that you create around you, helps you to wake. It sucks you towards waking. In the Hindu mythology, they say in heaven, where gods exist, every wish is fulfilled immediately with no time gap. In the Hindu conception of heaven, there are wish fulfilling trees, kalpataruks. Just you sit under them and wish anything, and without a time gap, here you wish and there it is. Not even a single moment is lost. You ask for a beautiful woman and she is there. But these gods must be living in a dream. They must be living in a drugged, stoned state. Hindus say that from heaven there is no way towards truth. This is very beautiful. They say if a god wishes to be liberated completely, he will have to come to the earth. Why? Because in heaven there is no unhappiness. There is no misery to wake anyone. There is a long, peaceful sleep where dreams are continuously fulfilled. When every dream is fulfilled, why one should open the eyes? Even gods have to come to earth, only then they can be liberated. This is a rare conception. Christians don't have that type of conception. Their heaven is the last thing, but Hindus say it is not the last thing. It is just a beautiful, good dream state. Good, beautiful, long, very long, for thousands of years it can long, but it is a dream state. If gods are to be liberated, they have to fall back to earth. Why to earth? Because on the earth there is misery, pain, anguish. And only anguish is needed. Only that can suck you out of your slumber. Heraclitus is right. It would not be better if things happened to man just as they wish. Something or other always goes wrong. That's beautiful. If nothing goes wrong, if everything as it is as you would like it to be, then who wants truth? Then who seeks existence? Then who wants freedom, total freedom, moksha? Nobody. Through drugs, man is trying to be like gods in the Hindu heaven. You take marijuana or hashish or LSD and you are in a dream state, beautiful dream state. You are under a wish fulfilling tree. Drugs are against truth, because truth means an awakening. Awakening from the past, awakening from the dreams, awakening from your desires, to see the whole fallacy that you have created around you, and to drop it. And to drop it without any effort, just to see that it is wrong and drop it. Remember, if you make much effort to drop it, the very effort makes you ugly. Understanding needs really no effort. You understand the thing, you see the reality, and you drop it. Can't you see that you are miserable because of your desires? Is it something to be argued? Something to be convinced? Can't you see it? It is so clear that out of desires you have created a hell. Then why make an effort? In a sheer, intense moment of understanding, why not drop it immediately? And if you can drop it immediately, then you have a beauty, a grace. This grace you will not find in so-called monks all over the world, Catholic, Hindu, Jain. You will not find this grace because they are trying to drop it. The very effort to drop seems that they are still clinging, otherwise why make any effort? They would like to stop desiring. But this is again a desiring. That's why there is effort. They cling and they would like to drop it. They have not come to a moment of understanding, a moment of truth. My whole effort with you is to bring you to a moment of understanding where effort is useless. The understanding is so intense, so fiery, that simply everything burns. You see, and your very seeing becomes the dropping. This is possible. This has happened to me, this can happen to you. I am in no way exceptional, just an ordinary man. If it happens to me, just an ordinary man, why not to you? Just make an intense search towards understanding. Understanding is transformation, mutation, a revolution. Understanding liberates. Listen to these words. It would not be better if things happen to man just as they wish. Unless you expect the unexpected, you will never find the truth. For it is hard to discover and hard to attain. Let these words enter your heart. Unless you expect the unexpected, you will never find the truth. Because the truth cannot be your expectation. Whatsoever you expect will be a lie. Whatsoever you expect will be a projection. Whatsoever you expect will be a part of your mind. No, truth cannot be expected. It takes you unawares. In fact, it comes when you were not even waiting for it. It is a sudden enlightenment. Expectation means your known projecting itself into the future, into the unknown. That's why I say if you are a Christian or a Hindu or a Buddha or a Jain, you will miss. Because what to be a Christian means? It means a Christian expectation. It means a God looked through Christian eyes. It means a conception, a philosophy. What does it mean to be a Hindu? It means a system of belief. It gives an expectation. You expect a God. You expect the truth. The truth will be like this. The God will be like this. The face, the figure, the form, the name. You expect. and your expectation is the barrier, because God is the unexpected. The truth is the unexpected. It has never been theorized. It has never been brought into language. It cannot be forced into words. Nobody has ever been able, and nobody will ever be. It remains the unexpected. It is a stranger. Whenever God knocks at your door, you will not find a familiar face. No, it is the unfamiliar, the stranger. You never thought about it. You never heard about it. You never read about it. Just the stranger. And if you cannot accept the stranger, if you ask for the familiar, truth is not for you. Truth is a stranger. It comes without giving any intimation that he is coming. It comes when you are not expecting, not waiting. Remember this, that people meditate and meditate and meditate, that's a must. But truth never happens in meditation. It happens outside. But meditation helps, it makes you alert. It makes you watchful. It makes you more aware and conscious. And then suddenly somewhere, it happens in such unexpected moments, you cannot believe that why God chooses such unexpected moments. A nun is carrying water and the bamboo breaks and the earthen pots fall on the ground and the water flows, and suddenly she is awakened. What happened? And she was for 40-50 years meditating, and it never knocked, because meditation means you are expecting, you are watching, something is going to happen. Your mind is there working, very subtle, very very subtle. You may not be even able to detect where it is. You may think that now everything is silent, no thought, but this is also a thought. You feel absolute silence. But even this feeling that now it is absolute silence, now soon the door is going to open, this is a thought. When you become absolutely silent, even this thought is not there, that I am silent. But that means you must not be meditating. And this is the paradox. Meditate as much as you can to bring a moment of a non-meditative meditation. That happened to that nun. Carrying water, she was not worried about God. And the bamboo was old. And she was worried about the bamboo. And she was holding it this way and that, holding it, worried that it may break any moment. And the parts are earthen, and they will break. And she was not at all at the door, and the door was open because she meditated for 40 years. So the door was open, and she was not there at all. Suddenly, the bamboo breaks, the part falls, breaks, and the water flows. It is a shock. For a moment, even this worry dissolves. Now, whatsoever was to happen has happened. Now, she is in a non-meditative, meditative moment. And God is there, and it happens. It has been happening that way always. In such moments, one never expected. When you expect, you miss. because you are there in your expectation. When you don't expect, it happens because you are not there. Nobody is there when your house is totally empty. So empty that you are not even aware that I am empty, because that much will be enough disturbance. When even emptiness is thrown, he comes. Unless you expect the unexpected, drop all your notions about God. All notions are false. You may have heard Hindus say Christian notions are false, Christians say Hindu notions are false, Jainas say Christian and Hindus are false, Buddhists say Jainas, Hindus, Christians are false. I say all notions are false. Not that my notion is right, no. Notion as such is false, because it makes a theory out of the unknown which is not possible. All theories are false, without any exception. All theories are false absolutely, categorically. Mine included. Because the unexpected remains the unexpected. Unless you expect the unexpected, you will never find the truth. For it is hard to discover and hard to attain. In fact, it is not hard to attain and not hard to discover. It is because of you. It is hard to attain and hard to discover. Because how to put this mind aside? Because mind is subtle. Even in putting aside, it remains. The mind says, okay, I will not be here. But this is also mind. The mind says, no, let the God knock at the door, I am not. But this is also the mind. The mind says, I will meditate. The mind says, I will drop all thoughts. The mind says, look, I have dropped all thoughts. Look, I am empty. But this is also mind. This is the problem. Whatsoever you do, the mind stands there. See the point. No effort will help. Just seeing the point. Mind exists through claims. See the point. Why I say see the point? Because if you see the point, then there is no claim. If you don't see the point, then the mind can claim, I am here, without any claim. See the point. Emptiness is needed, not the claim that I am empty. Awareness is needed, not the claim that I am awareness. Because wherever comes the I, you have entered the dark night of the mind. When the I is not there, it is light. Everything is clear, a clarity, a perception infinite. You can say far and wide, you can see the whole. So the only thing that can be done is to watch. The trickiness of the mind. And don't try to do the opposite. For example, your mind is filled with thoughts. Don't try to fight with the thoughts, because this fighter is the mind. And if you fight, the mind will claim the opposite. Look, he will say, I have dropped all the thoughts. Now, where is your God? Where is enlightenment? Don't do the opposite. Don't create a fight, because with fight comes the claim. You simply watch and relax. you simply watch and enjoy the trickiness of the mind. Just enjoy it. So beautiful. How deceptive. How elusive. How it comes and comes and comes again and again. Hindus have always seen it is just like the tail of the dog. For even 12 years, you keep it straight. The moment you stop the effort, it is crooked again. One small child was talking to me one day, and he was saying that we are making many efforts to straighten out a friend because he doesn't believe in Santa Claus. Then one day he said, for 7 days efforts, now he has yielded. And he said, okay, I believe. But next day again the boy said, now more efforts have to be made. So I asked, what is the matter? Because just the other day you said you have straightened him out. Now what is the need? He said, but he is crooked again. We straighten him out, he becomes crooked again and again. This is the nature of the mind. You cannot do anything about it. This is the nature of the mind. Understand it. That's all. Understanding is enough. Otherwise, it is a hard thing to attain. You can go on and on, and the mind will go with you like a shadow. And whatsoever you claim will be the mind's claim. That's why all the knowers have said, those who claim that they have known, they have not known. Those who say that they have achieved, they have not achieved. Why? Because the very claim is dangerous. Unless you expect the unexpected, you will never find the truth, for it is hard to discover and hard to attain. Nature loves to hide. It is a hide-and-seek game. It is beautiful as it is. Nature is not on the surface. It is hidden in the center. Nature is like the roots of the trees deep underground. The most essential is hidden. Never think that the tree is the most essential. Tree is just the periphery. Where flowers and leaves and fruits come, it is the periphery. The real tree exists underground in the dark. In the dark womb of the earth, it is hidden. You can cut the tree, a new tree will come out. But cut the roots and everything disappears. You are not on the surface of your skin. That is the periphery. You are deep, hidden underground. And God is not on the surface. And science goes on, learning more and more about the surface. Learning more and more about the skin. Howsoever deep science goes, it never goes deep. Because it learns from the outside. From the outside you can learn only about the skin. The real is hidden in the inside, in the innermost shrine. In you also it is hidden in the innermost shrine. And you live on the periphery, you miss it. And existence has a center. That center is hidden. Nature loves to hide. Why? Why nature loves to hide? Because it is a game. You must have played in your childhood a game of hide and seek. For Heraclitus, existence is a game, it is a leela, a play. It hides and it is beautiful, and you have to discover. And in the very effort to discover, you grow. There are two types of people. One I call non-discoverers. They remain on the periphery. And discoverers, they move towards the center. People who live on the periphery are the worldly people. The market is the periphery. The politics is the periphery. Success, achievement is the periphery. They are non-discoverers, non-adventurers. Even if they go to the moon, it is not an adventure because they remain on the periphery. The real adventure is religious. It is to move to the very center of being. First you have to move in yourself because you are a world miniature. You move to your center, and from that center you have the first glimpse how things are. The real is hidden. On the periphery are waves. On the periphery are dreams. On the periphery is just a soul. Deep inside, in the innermost core of existence, is the hidden one. That Heraclitus calls the hidden harmony. Move towards the being, the center, the very ground. Always seek the roots. Don't be befooled by the foliage. But you are befooled by the foliage. If a woman is beautiful on the surface, you fall in love. You have fallen in love with her foliage. But the woman may not be beautiful inside. She may be absolutely ugly. Then you are trapped. There is an inner grace. When the light burns inside, when the light comes to the periphery also, you can see from where it is coming. You can see a beautiful woman and yet ugly. And you can see just the opposite also happening, an ugly woman and yet beautiful. When an ugly woman is beautiful, you cannot find the source, where the source is, because the skin on the surface, the structure, the physiology is not attractive, but something inner attracts you. When it happens that the woman is beautiful on the surface and on the inner being also, then it is very mysterious. Then what happens is charisma. Sometimes you feel a charisma around a person. Charisma means now some hidden harmony between the surface and the center. And then the personality has a magnetism, something of the divine. This meeting of the periphery and the center is a hidden harmony. Nature loves to hide. Why? Because only through hiding the play can go on and on. Otherwise the play will stop. The game continues. It is an eternal game. And remember this also, that even if you have found, the game continues. But the game then has a different quality. Never think in any moment that when you have found the innermost core, the game stops. No. The game continues. Now, knowingly, many times you move away from the hidden center. Knowingly you give a chance to nature to hide again. But now it is knowingly. It is just as two children are playing. And the one knows where the other is hiding. Except that place he seeks everywhere. Runs around and around to give game a quality. He knows where you are hiding. He can simply go and catch you, but he will go around and around. Buddhas continue to play, but the game changes. Now they know. Now there is no anxiety. Now there is no desire. Now nothing to be achieved. Now it is a simple game. There is no goal to it. It continues. So there are two possibilities. An ignorant game. That is what is happening to you. And because you are ignorant, you take the game very seriously. Seriousness becomes a disease. You become sad about it. People come to me, if they meditate and they are not attaining, they are very serious, they feel frustrated. I say, don't be frustrated, because that is the whole point to be understood. It is a game. There is no hurry to finish it. It is not a business. Let it prolong as long as possible. Why be in such a hurry? Why be so tense? Infinity is there, eternal time is there, there is no hurry. And you will be always there, and the game will be always there. It has been always there and will always be there. Take it easily, take easy. It is always by the corner, any moment it can be discovered. But why be in such a hurry? Relax. If you can relax, you reach to the center sooner. If you are in a hurry, you remain on the surface. Because a hurry, a tense state of mind, cannot move to the deeper realms of being. Only patience helps you to settle to the bottom, to the very bottom. Nature loves to hide. It is beautiful that nature loves to hide. Nature is not an exhibitionist. Nature is not an exhibitionist. The expression that is all around, the foliage, is just a way to hide. In a flower, God is hiding in a subtle way. If you simply see the flower, you will miss. One English poet, Tennyson, has said, and said absolutely rightly, that if I can understand a flower in its totality, I will understand the God. He is right. If you can understand a pebble on the shore in its totality, you will understand God, because these are all hiding places. Flower is a hiding place. A pebble is also a hiding place. He is hiding everywhere, millions of forms. Wherever you are, He is there, in all forms around you. Any form can become a door. Once you have the readiness to enter, once you are not expecting, once you are not desiring, once you are not asking for something, projecting something, suddenly the door is open. The Lord, whose oracle is at Delphi, neither speaks nor conceals, but gives signs. At Delphi, there is an old Greek shrine. And people used to go to the Oracle of Delphi to ask. But the Oracle of Delphi never said anything, simply gave signs. Heraclitus is using that as a parable. He says, the God, the total, the whole, never speaks in yes or no. He gives simply signs. He is poetic. He gives you symbols. Don't try to interpret them. If you interpret, you will miss. Just watch and let the sign go deeper in you and be imprinted on the heart. Don't try to find the meaning immediately, because who will find the meaning? If you find the meaning, it will be your meaning. Just let the sign, the symbol, be imprinted on your heart, and someday life will reveal the meaning. You simply live with it. You simply let it be there. For example, you come to me and you ask, how is my meditation going on? You ask me. I smile. I have given you a sign. Now what you will do about it? You can interpret. That is the first tendency of the mind. You will think, okay. So he smiles means I am achieving. He says yes. So everything is okay. I am going on the right path. Your ego feels fulfilled. If you are in a positive mood, this will be the interpretation. If you are in a negative mood, you will think he smiles, he doesn't say yes. Was polite. But I am going nowhere. You missed either way. Because if there was any yes to be said, I would have said. I would not have put you in such a trouble to find the interpretation. If there was a yes to be said, I would have said. If there was a no to be said, I would have said. But I have simply smiled. I have neither said yes nor no. In fact, I have not said anything. I have given you a sign. Don't interpret it. Let this smile move deeper into your heart. Let this smile be there. Remember it sometimes. Put it back into the heart. Let it dissolve into you. You don't try to find the meaning. And this will help your meditation. And suddenly one day in a deep meditative state, you will start smiling the same way I smiled. Because that moment will be the moment of understanding. Then you can laugh. Then what was the meaning, you will know. Life is subtle. Yes and no cannot be used. Life is so subtle that if you say yes, you falsify it. If you say no, you falsify it. And language is very poor. It knows only two things, yes or no. And life is very rich. It knows infinite postures, positions between yes and no. Infinite gradations. It is a spectrum of many, many million colors. Yes and no are very poor. You say nothing. Yes and no means you have divided life in dark and white. But life has millions of colors. It is a rainbow. black and white in fact are not colors. Except black and white, all colors exist. You must understand this. Black is absence of all colors. It is not a color. When no color is present, the emptiness is blackness. It is not a color in itself. That's why in nature you don't find black. It is not much. It is absence. And white is also not a color. It is a mixture of all colors. If you mix all the colors, it becomes white. It is not a color. White is one pole, black is another. Presence of all colors is white, absence of all colors is black. Between these two polarities, real colors exist. Green and red and yellow and all the sets of them, millions of sets. When I smile, I am not saying black or white, yes or no. I am giving you a color in the spectrum, a real color. Don't try to interpret, because if you interpret, you will either say it is black or white, and it is neither. It is somewhere in between, and it is so subtle, words cannot express. If words could express, I would have given you a word. I would not put you in trouble unnecessarily. You come to me and you say something, and I don't answer. Sometimes it happens you come to see me and I don't even ask. I simply forget about you. I ask others and simply drop you out of count. You will interpret it. Why? Don't interpret. Just let this gesture be deep in you. Someday in a very, very meditative mood, the meaning will flower. I am sowing seeds in you. Not giving you words and theories. When I am gone, please remember me as a poet, not as a philosopher. A poetry has to be understood in a different way. You have to love a poetry, not interpret. You have to repeat the poetry many times so it mixes with your blood, with your bones, with your very marrow. You have to chant a poetry many times so that you can feel all the nuances, subtle sets of it. You have to simply sit and let the poetry move within you so it becomes a life force. You digest it and then you forget about it. It moves deeper and deeper and deeper and changes you. Let me be remembered as a poet. Of course, I am not writing poetry in words. I am writing poetry in a more alive medium in you. And that's how the whole existence is doing. Says Heraclitus, the Lord whose oracle as it at Delphi, neither speaks nor conceives but gives signs. A sign is not to be interpreted. A sign is to be lived through. Your mind will have the temptation to interpret. Don't be tempted by the mind. Just say to the mind, this is not your field. This is not for you. You play with other things. Let this go deeper in my being. And that's what I am doing while I am talking to you. I am not talking to your minds. I am talking to you as beings, as luminous beings, as gods incarnate, as possibilities, as infinite potentialities. I am talking to your future, not to your past. Your past is rubbish, throw it, don't carry it. I am talking to your future, the unexpected, the unknown. By and by, you will become capable to listen to this music, the music of the unknown, the music in which all the opposites disappear and a hidden harmony arises. Yes, nature loves to hide, because nature is a mystery. It is not a question. It is not a puzzle to be solved. It is a mystery to be lived, enjoyed, celebrated. Enough for today.